exceptions. The problem is that the exceptions are exceptions. Rules with exceptions we could deal with. They're harder with the exceptions. There are multiple exceptions.
So we talked last time about Ein Teuchen Ella B'Gedulei Karka. So, principally, if I took a piece of meat, or a piece of cheese, egg, fish, and I ground it up, to order a grinder and ground it up on Shabbos, I wouldn't violate Teuchen. Ein Teuchen Ella B'Gedulei Karka. It's to grow from the soil. Plant life. Ein Teuchen Ella B'Gedulei Karka. Well, we said there are limitations, which we'll come back to, on what I can use to process the meat, the cheese, the fish, etc. The conventional kalim that I used, a grinder, a grater, I cannot use. Good.
Even if it's not gedulei karka?
What? Even if it's not gedulei karka. If it's gedulei karka, it'll be an isa d'oraisa. And if it's not gedulei karka, it's an isa d'rabbanan. We'll see why. And that's something, a klal that I want to explore a little later on in the share. So, that should lead us then that simply, if it doesn't grow from the soil, there's no teichen. But life is not that simple. First of all, we pointed out the exception that karka itself, earth, clumps of earth. You want to make a bunch of sand, they take a clump and break it up. It's furish in the Gemara, that you have a teichen.
Who are you?
What?
You are?
You are. Before Hashem. You want to be before Hashem.
By doing it, how you
overcome
Teuchen,
it's
not like
a Gedulei Karka. Oh, so we'll see. Take iron ore, iron, and you make iron filings, you over Teuchen. So, as I said, every exception, the problem is the exceptions have exceptions. So this is the first exception. And the first exception is that in Teuchen Ella B'Gedulei Karka only refers to edibles, but it doesn't refer to non-edibles. Another klal. So therefore, I mean, if I make iron filings or I crumble earth, that's a violation of Teuchen. No.
All non-edibles have Teuchen?
If it's, yeah. Non-edibles have Teuchen.
You saw that in Teuchen Ella B'Gedulei Karka was only in
within a... It's a klal in...
In
yes, in edibles.
It's in edibles, but the examples you gave are not edibles.
So that's why it doesn't apply to them.
It does. You make sawdust.
Yeah, you are over. There is time. Well, sawdust is b'chal l'ashad. That's gedulei karka.
Yeah.
But I took iron filings and not gedulei karka.
Right,
crumbling earth is not gedulei karka.
Right.
And you still over toichen. If it would only end with that, okay, a little adjustment along the way. But life is still not so simple. And to put it in context, I'm going to take a step back from where we're at and what the halacha is. Tois v'shita m'sechta Shabbos is that Teuchen only applies. And let's underscore the only. That's the unique aspect of Tois v'shita. That Teuchen only applies to take from something which is inedible and rendering it edible. So let's say it's something which is very hard, it's hard to chew. So you take it and you put it in a grater and you make mush out of it. So now it's edible. So by rendering it edible, that's the only time that you overtake it. Something which is roi l'achila without it, it's no teichen. That's teisus. You wouldn't pass them like teisus. The Tosis opens our window, our eyes, open the window on the fact that becoming Roy Lachila is part of the deal. Now it presents itself, Lahalocha, from a different angle, which is that even though normally we say, I take a piece of meat and I want to take a knife and chop it up, dak, 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 to a superfine Mushal Shabbos. It's 100% mutter. No shaylus. And I don't have to do it for immediate use. I could do it for Friday night for shalosh shulis. It's not teichen. So now we have a big asterisk. The big asterisk is the following. Let's say first of all, it's a meat a piece of meat, which is tough, you know. Meat, you need mazel. Sometimes you get a steak that's soft as butter. And sometimes you get a steak that you don't know if you can drive a nail through. But it depends a lot on what it was fed. You know, if you're one of the green types, and you like grass-fed meat, so it's very healthy. But it doesn't taste too good. It's pretty tough. If you get a black Angus that comes out of Nebraska and Iowa, fed on corn, so you get a steak that you want to you can dig into. But you get yourself a steak and Sagatnish, you can't eat the steak. So you want to take a knife and just shave it down into tiny little pieces. Tiny little pieces, at least be able to eat. So since it's rendering it roi l'achila, even though it's a non-gedulei karka, it becomes teich. Deraisa. Yeah, I think deraisa, yeah. So this is, as I said, the exceptions have exceptions.
Didn't the Rosh say last time that they said that theorem of Bolre, like Yad, Bavsherachilo?
Yeah, that's true. But it doesn't have this.
Why wouldn't that apply here?
This is because this is making it into an Oichel, and that's particularly what Teuchen is. That's one aspect of Teuchen. So it's not just cutting it up. Cutting it up, Shad, is it was Roy Lachila, and now I'm making little pieces out of it. But making it Roy Lachila, that itself, according to them, is a Malacha. Now, still not finished. And this is an issue that the halacha explores over and over and over and over again in many different contexts. I have a piece of meat that most people can eat. But there's a 93-year-old man that's sitting here, and his teeth don't work too well anymore. And for him, it's too tough. Can I shave it down into tiny little pieces, slivers, to make it edible for him? Now, if I didn't make it into tiny slivers, just small pieces, okay, so it wouldn't be, you know, probably would be like slices. It wouldn't be butter, it wouldn't be teuch. I want to make it into tiny, tiny specks so that he can eat it. So now we're in a quandary. Do we follow the roif? Most people typically find it usable. Or do we follow the meat? This is a halacha that you find. You can look it up in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim. You'll find this halacha. It's all over. How we balance these off. And you'll find it in the halachas of Metzias HaPas. What you have to wash for. What you have to bench for. Endless. It's over and over and over and over again in the halacha. In many different places. So here we find another dichotomy. That it depends what we're dealing with. If I'm dealing with non-gedulei karka, a piece of meat, and most people find it edible, so then I'm allowed to chop it down into tiny, tiny, tiny specks. But if we're dealing with gedulei karka, which is the real full-fledged teichen, there it doesn't go. There I'm not allowed.
So I want to give my grandson a little piece of banana, I should still be able to cut it.
So you can cut them smaller. He doesn't need specks.
No.
And he could probably even need a little bit bigger piece, you know.
No teeth, yeah.
Yeah, they'll suck on it until they get it down, yeah. Kitzur Hadvarim, it's so these are some of the complications that are in Teuchen. Now, I mentioned last time there's a rather remarkable machlokes in the Rishonim. The idea of miyad for immediate use is as a mocker in Shas in the Sugya Boyer, the Fayin Dalit. But in Teuchim, we don't find any such Gemara. But there are Rishonim that, from their perspective on Shas, this exists. But it's not spelled out anyplace. Since it's not spelled out any place, inevitably there are those other Rishonim that say there is no such Heta. So, how exactly do we work this out? So, Lechatchila, we should certainly not follow the Miyad Shita in a pure sense. That we shouldn't do. even though it may in time maybe do. Now, what should we do? Lechatchila. So lechatchila, Chofetz Chaim came to a very wise approach to this problem. Now, before we go to the Chofetz Chaim's approach, we have to provide one other definition. So we said toichen means taking large pieces and rendering it into small pieces. The only problem is a very simple problem. What's a large piece and what's a small piece? Now all of these things are very relative. You know, a large elephant and a small elephant is different than a large grape and a small grape. You know, the one's large and one's small, but the term is a relative term. So how do we define it? And this is an abiding issue in the halacha. It touches Uchas Treifas and the halachas of Shiurim. All over we have this problem. Why? Because we live in a world where we have a unified mathematical notation for measurement. Right? Basically, the entire world, in any real sense, uses the metric system. You know, anything, even in manufacturing in this country, is in the metric system. The English system, the pounds and the feet, that's for domestic consumption. But when it gets, they're selling anything and they're making anything for the world, because it makes real difference. It's not just what you call it. But the screw size changes if it's a metric screw or an English measurements. And they don't fit, one, you cannot substitute one for the other. The hole is slightly off. It doesn't work. So it's important. So the world has a unified system today. So we don't tell you it's big, it's little. We tell you it's 62 millimeters. That's how big the hole is. Right? It weighs 100 kilo. We have a measurement. It's clear. In the ancient world, they did not have a unified system of measurement. It's interesting. One thing which did emerge historically, really, when it came from a non-Jewish source, it had to do, I think, with the rise of some king, maybe a Syrian king, but a king in the Middle East. They had, throughout the Middle East, there was a system called Minyan Shtoros, the years of Shtoros. In other words, you have to know in business when a document is from. Is this from 2014, 2013, 2015, 2010? If you just have a pile of documents and you can't figure out which is first and which is second, you're lost. So, you know, today, that's the reason. Why is it, if you ask yourself today, why they're celebrating in Taiwan the Christian New Year? What are they celebrating? What's it to them? It's not part of their history and their culture. So a few Galochim came there, Malayla, okay, but what's not part of their Asian culture? The pshat is because that's the system of Shtoros today. The dating for business deals, this is the calendar that the whole world uses. And Ramela, on their calendar, the calendar is starting anew. So in the ancient world, they had a system which was called the Minyan Shtoros, which came from a non-Jewish source, which obviously had to do with the ascendancy of some king or some empire. And it was used maybe for about 1,000 years, I think, for a very lengthy period of time in the Middle East. And the Jews also used it when they lived. This was a system which was employed in the entire Middle East for a very lengthy period of history called the Minyan Shtoros. So you need a unified system. We never had a unified system of measurement. So we describe things. How do we describe things? The Kiddush Gav asked Dabar Avias. What's a Avias? A Avias Halid. And what's a leg? 6 eggs. So a Avias is an egg and a half. Okay. Now just tell me what's an egg. Now, there are packaged, I believe, in this country, 5 different size eggs. 4 of them is commonly sold commercially. Medium, large, extra large, and jumbo. Now, if you look on the side of a box of eggs, it'll tell you, well, in this box of eggs of this size, there are from 24 to 28 ounces in the box. So that means there's, in round numbers, a third of an ounce variation, or more in each egg. So what's an egg? And then eggs are different. If you've lived in Eretz Yisrael and you lived in America, the American egg is much larger than the Israeli egg. It's not the same size.
something like that. In the ancient days, the chickens were smaller, the eggs were smaller.
Could be. We don't know. But I'm just saying, whatever it was, but we used descriptive measurements. Descriptive measurements. You know, for a shear for tumah. So we said, if a kli has a hole, is it kamitzi zayas? Can an olive fall out from it? Is it kamitzi riman? Can a pomegranate fall out from it? These are all, in a way, approximations. You know, because the olive is no two olive. You know, which olive are we talking about? Which pomegranate are we talking about?
Did Chazal mean a specific size and that's just how they described it? Or
it probably meant the specific size. That would be a specific, had it probably meant the most typical one of that time.
Yeah.
That have a kvichos tumah, that have a shear.
How do they expect people to figure it out?
Anyway, because it was common.
Right.
If I tell you something the size of a baseball, you know what it means. That's all. I tell you the size of a softball, you know what it means.
But the level of precision wasn't the same.
No, it wasn't the same.
It wasn't commanded.
Yeah, it wasn't, whatever. I guess it was close enough to deter, that's what the Torah wanted you to use. That's the din of shiurim, and that's it. And it was close enough for its purposes. So that's why we always have, we have problems across all the halachas, because we change the type of measurement that we use in the world. And how do we figure out what the old ones were to try to figure out the new ones? When it comes to a revius yayin, the shiurim from the smallest, which seem increasingly to those that Talmid Chacham that are eyeing into it to be the most correct. Rav Chaim Noah's share is somewhere approximately 2.7 ounces. The Satan Rebbe was a tzal also held that way. And increasingly in the world, and the T is in that direction that he's right, in the Lomdish world. And yet we have Shiurim that are almost twice as much as that.
For
a Vias, yeah. And Kahina of a Kahina. So now when we come back, I tell you all this as an introduction, when we say, well, you violate Teichen if you dice something very finely. Okay. Accepted. Now one little guy, just tell me what's very finely. Why very finely did the cook in my yeshiva, she would have thrown away, she wouldn't have put her name on such a salad. But I was very fine for me. So this is a problem. The answer is, we don't know the answer. So what do we do? So the Chofetz Chaim says the following. That, practically speaking, we should make it, the pieces a little, when we're dicing on Shabbos, larger than people would normally make them. And do it from miyad. For immediate use. So this way, if even if there's no heter or miyad, but the larger pieces, so it's not teichen. And even if it is small pieces, so we have the heter or miyad. So this way we manage to cover all the bases. But we're fully cognizant of the fact that we do not have an objective measurement for what's considered small enough to be teichen. You know, we can obviously, you know, cut a large slice off an apple from one end to the other. So we know that that's not teichen. You know, but as we start getting smaller and smaller, we reach a point that we're not going to be able to define if it's teichen or not. Now, so this is, as I said, this is a general issue. Because it...
Can you clarify a bit more what exactly, when you cut it into small pieces, that means small, like dicing?
Dicing.
Even like cutting up a carrot into like a few small pieces?
No. Dicing. Really small pieces.
Dice it a little bit more than the norm, and it still has to be miyad?
Yes.
If
correct.
If more than the norm, there's a kashash, that would still be...
Well, listen, as I say, it depends who's norm. That's also part of the problem.
By the norm, you mean what normal...
Generally speaking, but I said we don't know. It's hard to define. So we push it up a little bit, and then we say mechan miyad.
You're making Israeli salad, those little bits of cucumber and everything are always diced.
Yeah.
There are always, everything in there is, you know, like you described, diced.
Yeah, they know how to dice.
What? Yeah.
But Rob, does the shear depend on what we do now, or does it depend on what Chazal...
Listen, all we,
when,
as
when,
I said,
when they,
all we...
When they analyze these halakhot.
Listen, we know that Teichen has to do with rendering things very small pieces. But what's exactly very small, that's, you know, we weren't there. We didn't sechut Rav Ashi. You know, somebody came to me, I was at a chasana last night, and a Rebbe from one of the local yeshivas came, and he wanted to know for the little kids what's the share of a kezias, that they should, you know, what share should they have to be mechanach them for benching. So I have to have a kezias. What's a kezias? So I broke off from a piece of challah, and I said, hey, this is a kezias. Don't squeeze it, you know.
Size of an actual olive.
So, you know, for little kids, I made a smaller share based on the Rambam, you know. You know, it's enough to be sevach on the Rambam sheet, a third of a beya. Out of here. But, you know, we weren't there when Rav Ashi, you know, gave out he showed you, Rabbi Yisrael, this is it. We weren't in the yeshiva that day.
Don't we have to try to
so that's what the Achrayim are trying to do for us. Exactly. That's our Asik. What did I see in the Beis Shmuel? Ein lanu ela masha omru chazal. That's it. Everything else is, you know.
So they're telling us I have to eat
kazayas
matzah, and they come out these outrageous urine that I've decided is
to give. What do you mean? I'm in the Mari. Listen, for those of us that sell matzahs, they're double the shiur. I'm not big enough yet. Now, we come to another very interesting thing, which touches a klal. Very interesting klal. If I'm going to take a grater, normally I grate potatoes on the grater, I make latkes with it. Now I'm going to take a piece of cheese, and grate a piece of cheese in Shabbos. So real teichen it's not. Because it's not gedulei karka, and it's an edible item. Oh. So here we find, in the kadmoinim, that we're not supposed to do it. Why? Because it's uvda dechayl. We appear to be doing a malacha. Now, uvda dechayl is something which is very, very hard to define. Rav Moshe Zatzal attempts, in one piece, to take a number of cases and give them all one halachic hagdara, which is, you know, masterful. You know, to be able even to think in those terms on such a klal. But we take it to mean something which doesn't fit in with the, you know, there's a dissonance between that and Shabbos, whether we seem to be doing a malacha or whether it doesn't have the right atmosphere for Shabbos. We find a lot of things. It's a very big klal. There's a Medrash Eicha, I think in the second parak, it is in the Medrash Eicha, which says the following. There was a city, and in this city, I guess there must have had an Erev in this city, they played ball on Shabbos in this town. And the city was Nechrav, it was destroyed because of this. So one of the Mefarshim on the Medrash says, the Pshat is that Lahalocha, you cannot play any game on a soft surface if you're concerned with the levelness of the surface. So, for example, golf you can't play on Shabbos, even if you have an absolute Rishus HaYochid. You can't play golf on Shabbos. Why? Because what happens if you don't make a good swing and you smack out a divot, you know, a piece of the ground goes flying. So all over the place they have signs, replace the divots. You know, they want you to put, I guess they hope they'll grow again if they put them back in the right place. They'll just take root again and life will go on. So, and it's important to have, if the ground is not smooth, you smooth the ground out, you know. You know, in football, you don't really care what's on the ground. You know, if you're the shortstop in baseball, it's important that the ground be level. You know, so the ball doesn't fly in some strange way at you. So any time there's a concern that you will want to level the ground, you cannot do the activity which would necessitate leveling the ground. So he learned this Achron, that either they at least violated the Rabbonim, or they actually did the Ashuya Gumas, they were Mechalo Shabbos by actually flattening the ground up, you know, maybe with a soccer game or something like that. Torah HaShulchan says, no, it's not the Pshat. And I guess, I presume he means to say that if it was a real violation of Shabbos, so, if it's a Deraisa, so what the Chiddush should have made? If it's a Rabbonim, like, why should it be so? That, to that extent. So the Torah HaShulchan says, the Pshat is, that it was uvda d'chayim. It was inconsistent with the atmosphere which should prevail on Shabbos. Zilzal, the degradation of Shabbos. Now it's interesting, we find in the Gemara in Gittin such a Gemara. The Gemara says in Gittin there were two families, right? Lamed Ches, I think is the Gemara, right? Two families which were uprooted, which fell apart. Why? One family was a very wealthy family. And whenever you came, 7 days a week, there was a feast and a celebration going on. You know, the cook cooked first rate. Twice a day, every day of the week. So in the Meilo, there was no covered Shabbos. They conducted the meal, you know, the morning meal was at whatever, okay, it's 12 o'clock, and the night meal at 8 o'clock, and this was Shabbos included. So there was no covered Shabbos. Shabbos is exactly the same. So the Rishonim say that they were supposed to make the meal fancier, or on Shabbos, and less fancy during the week, or at least change the time. Something should be different. But that's talking to the ambience of Shabbos. It doesn't have, you're not putting an emphasis. You're not grabbing the uniqueness of Shabbos. It's Ashtay Mishpochos with Nekros. But the other one was a different type of problem. They decided the best time to party on Shabbos was when the Rov was saying Shir. They had their Kiddush Klal when the Rov was saying Shir. So that's the other one the Gemara says. So, but you see there, the Gemara, the concern for Uvda D'Chayil. And there wasn't even so much Uvda D'Chayil, but it almost incidentally detracted from the ambience of Shabbos. It wasn't they did anything that they shouldn't do. Everything was fine. But they weren't careful to project the significance of Shabbos. And all the things in Shabbos, the Radak talks about it in the Psukkim of So in those Pesukim, the Radak talks about the Oinek Shabbos is to stress, in fact, the uniqueness of Shabbos. It's to make Shabbos unique. It's a special day. It's different than everything else. And if we miss that, we can miss the essence. So here we have Uvda D'Chayil. We have in the Rambam also. The Rambam is a very interesting idea. There's a whole shy in the while, once in a shear, whatever, the rabbi asks on him. We'll come to that in a moment. But on the shear, I'm not going to tell you tonight. The shear is for a different time. But the Rambam says that there's a notion that there should be Shvisan Hanikaras, that there should be an observance of Shabbos which really unites all of us and makes it manifest the way all of us act, that today is Shabbos. So the Rambam was well aware of the fact that society tends to be stratified, you know. You know, if Aaron's father, the grandfather, left him 5 office buildings in Manhattan, this is Yerusha, so Aaron wouldn't be sitting worrying about Parnosa and his job, and go to work, whatever. He'd have other things on his mind, you know. Only 5 office buildings in Manhattan, he'd be, you know, a comfortable yid, quite comfortable. No, if you get that comfortable, the Rambam says, then maybe you don't work the whole week either. Who's working? So the Rambam says there'll be no Shvisa Anikaras. The fact that some people don't work on Shabbos, they don't work on Monday and Tuesday either. You know, so what's going to manifest by everyone the ambience that Shabbos should have? The Rambam says that's one of the inyonim in Hilchos Muktzah. No matter what you don't do during the week, there's nobody that doesn't handle Muktzah. So by putting that, that provides the atmospherics of Shabbos. The fact that we don't handle Muktzah stresses the uniqueness of the day. It's different. Its tenor is different. The tone is different. So Uvda D'Chayil touches a lot of different things. The Ravid asks on the Rambam, and I'm not going to go into what the answer to it is. But the Ravid says, this is, what in the world, who asked the Rambam? There's no Gemara that says these reasons. So what did the Rambam show us his creativity in this Perek and Hilchos Shabbos for? The Gemara says in Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Beis and Shabbos, that Muktzah is also because of Eitzah, which is really Nechemya ben Chaklaya. Nechemya is the one that basically instituted Muktzah. His Muktzah, in fact, was more stringent than our Muktzah. And I'll tell you why. And over time, when he achieved his end, they liberalized muktzah back to where it is today. But in his, when he initially started with muktzah, they were super machmer. Nechemya comes to Yerushalayim, first Ezra came, then the Nechemya came. And the place was a Chorban Lira. So Ezra sizes up the scene. Now Ezra was an officer of the king. So Ezra had soldiers at his command. So if he wanted to do something, he didn't have to come and say, please cooperate. He put a soldier there and he said, you will cooperate. And that was the end of the discussion. So when he came, the Radak said, I believe the Radak is the one that says, learns Pshat, the market day in Yerushalayim was on Shabbos. You think problems with Shabbos in Yerushalayim are new? At the beginning of the second verse, the market day, that was the main business day, was Shabbos. So, and they were vibing with Chala Shabbos with Eitzo, bringing the goods into the city, the very Eitzo. So along came the Chemya, and the Chemya said, that's it. The market is closed. They put soldiers around the city. Nobody's going in and out on Shabbos. Nobody's going in. And goodbye. It's closed. End of discussion. But that they shouldn't be able to sneak goods around and move them and still be involved in getting commerce in the city. So we legislated muktzah. That what you could move around was extremely limited. Only what was basically almost a dire necessity to use on Shabbos. Other than that, you couldn't move anything. So this basically, so he brought the economic life of Yerushalayim to a standstill on Shabbos. Once he achieved his end, then they liberalized muktzah to some extent. So it was initially created as a means of limiting chaytzah. And the Gemara says in Shabbos that muktzah was varkuf chavdal ramad beza, muktzah was legislated because of chaytzah. So the Ravid wants to know, what did the Rambam, who asked him to make up all of these reasons? It's a shmooze for a different time. Have a good Teretz. Also based on Agamah, but not for them. But what we see, our kolponim is the inyan of, there's an overall atmosphere of Shabbos, the Rambam tells us. So that's what they were out to achieve through muktzah. Now, let's say, in fact, you know, there are times that I'm allowed to use a hammer on Shabbos. How many of us would be comfortable walking down, I walk down Main Street on Shabbos with a hammer in my hand, walking along the street, you know? If I had to take a hammer, at the very least, I'd put it in a bag and I'd hide the fact, right? Because it's mutter, I know it's mutter, I got a psak from the rov, it's mutter, but I'm not walking down Main Street with a hammer in my hand. It's not happening Shabbos, right? Why? Because it just doesn't fit with what Shabbos is. This is not what you're supposed to have in your hand on Shabbos, is a hammer. A Gemara maybe, but not a hammer. So, it's a question of the ambience of Shabbos. So, when we involve ourselves with kalim, which we're not supposed to use on Shabbos, I'm using it for a mutadika reason, but that's already a zilzal in Shabbos. If I'm getting out the mukta stuff, the stuff that's basically oriented to doing malachas with, and I'm running around using it, and I'm using it yet on Shabbos. How far are we? I'll grate a piece of cheese. But, you know, Sam Kosofsky is a very learned man, so he grates cheese in Shabbos. His next door neighbor, you know, didn't learn a word since he's 12 years old. He's a good Jew, he's Erlich Yid, he wants to do what's right, but he knows, listen, Sam, it's a Yid that learns. Sam knows what he's talking about. So he came to Sam's house, and at Sam's house they were grating the cheese. So he'll be grating potatoes next week. Alom, this is good in the karka, this is good in the karka. The world doesn't work that way. It's a zuzel, that's all. It detracts from the Kedusha Shabbos.
Why does Hazal allow us to use a Kedusha Laftal Yisrael at Tzoratavra on winter? Why is that not also?
Because the Pshat is, Licha, if we had, the halacha is, if I had anything else which could serve that purpose without, then I'm not supposed to use it. It's only if I don't have anything else which could do it as well that I'm allowed to.
But I can't, let's say I have no other way to grate cheese.
So that's on their scale, because this is closer to Malacha than that. So this, they felt, is a bigger zilz than this is a kli of Malacha. You know, using a hammer, a sof kosof, is not, you know, you're doing a totally different thing. It's like, could you pick up a grater on Shabbos to scratch your head? Yeah, you could pick up a grater to scratch your head. You know, if that's the best thing you have. Or you want to hear Dudnik Talmidim comes, you want to hit him over the head. You know? But here you're actually grating. So you're basically doing the same type of malacha with a kli which is oriented. The kli which you would do an Issa Deraisa with. So Chazal saw the potential pitfall in all of that.
So that's kind of similar. I mean, if I took that hammer and I broke my walnuts with it because I had nothing else around it, that would be mutter. But would you describe?
That'll be awesome. So that's so. Listen, as I told you, I just learned. I was learning in the Beis Shmuel in Siman Zion, I believe, in Eben Ezra. And in response to a kasha of the Chalkus Mechalkik, he says, "Ain lono el masha amu Chazal." You know, we're not writing the legislation. We're trying to understand the legislation. You know, we're not gonna figure out everything which motivated them to legislate that which they did, you know. There are their reasons. So, this is an inyan in the atmospherics. It touches Hilchus Yontif too. It's very, very complex in Hilchus Yontif, but the same type of issues. In other words, one is a malocha, one is similar to malocha, it touches Hilchus Yontif too. So this is the basic story of Teuchen. What else do we need to know? We need to know the following. I mentioned last time there's a klal of Ein Teuchen Acha Teuchen. So the simplest way really to understand this klal, not the only way, the simplest way to understand this klal is the way the Chazon Ish interprets it. As I mentioned to you, that it doesn't mean, it's not similar to Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. In Bishul Acha Bishul is because once you cook the steak, you can't cook it again. You can make it hot, but you can't cook it, it doesn't get raw again. But in Bishul, we also have a klal that by non-Euchlin, you can have Bishul Acha Bishul. So if you melt wax on Shabbos, the melting of wax could be Bishul. It's Bishul because you're softening something with heat, and I want to say that I want to make soft. Then I let it get cool, it gets hot again. Then I melt it again, I would violate Bishul a second time. Because when it cooled down, it went back to the initial state of which it was in. So I'm starting again from scratch. So the Chazon Ish says that that's not the pshat in Ein Teuchen Achar Teuchen. That, because he says the pshat in Ein Teuchen Achar Teuchen is that it's a man-made band. It didn't occur naturally. That's what the pshat is. So a clump of earth that occurs in nature. Even if it started with sand, if you leave it outside, the water comes, the rain comes, and nature puts it back into clumps again. So according to the Chazon Ish, for example, let's say you take a pill. So a pill is certainly Ein Teuchen Acha Teuchen. And it's probably true for two different reasons. In all probability, first of all, it was compounded in the factory, and then it was clumped together. So these ingredients were already ground down once. The way form in which it presents itself to me is not a naturally occurring form. It's a man-made form. Since it's a man-made form, there's no teichen. So let's say you have to, it's just, you'd like to mix this. You can take this pill, but it's uncomfortable. It's a little bit bitter. So you could get it down, but you would rather chop it up into tiny little pieces and then mix it in a cup of water or juice or something and drink it down that way. Just be more comfortable. So you roll out on Shabbos, there's no Easter. It's the klal of Ein Teuchen Acha Teuchen. Now we have the times. You know, something. There are times that something spills on our clothes, you know. And it may be that there's an Easter Teuchen that's involved. A piece of potato fell on our clothes and it left part of the potato. Was never ground up, it was a cooked potato, in part if I scratch it off, I could violate Teuchen. Because Teuchen is not only by raw items, Teuchen is la halochas by cooked items too. Take a cooked.
Sorry, I'm stuck on a pill. Wasn't the original reason why they said not to take medicine and get away
with it? That's something else. You take the initial herbs and compound them.
Azelchus?
Yes, that's how you would make the medicines in the first place. You know, that's, you know, they took herbs and they made herbal medicines. So So you put them on a mortar and pestle and you ground them up. So this is a common, and if you get, mud on your pants on Shabbos, you also have to be careful with teichen, on your shoes. Also issues of teichen involved. And scraping it off and getting... That's a whole terrace. I don't want to go right now. We're not going to take that up. But there are all limitations. If it's dried. So, this is a general look at Teichen. Now, I just want to point out, just in the context of the things that we've touched upon tonight, Tosis' view that Teichen has only to do with rendering something edible particularly resonates according to the Sheet of the Rishalmi and the Malachas. I mentioned earlier on in the Shiurim that in our Mishnah in Klal Godel, it lists the 11th Malachas Eifa, baking. So the Mishnah, the Gemara says in Shabbos that the reality is the Malachas Bishul. And what was the Bishul? They cooked the peels, the vegetables, the fruits, to extract natural dyes from them. That was the Bishul in the construction of the Mishkan. So why does it say Eifa in the Mishkan? So it says Eifa in the Mishkan because that's Sidur Depas. It's an easy way to remember the first 11 Malachos if you consider everything you have to do from the planting and straight ahead all the way until you get a loaf of bread. So it's an easy way to remember the first 11 Malachos. But the actual Malachos Bishul. The Bishalmi said, no, the actual Malacha is Afiyah. So where was Afiyah in the Mishkan? In the building of the Mishkan? Oh, so that wasn't in the building of the Mishkan. So as the Egnei Tal explains, you're right. That when we talk about there was a Malacha in the Mishkan, that includes the service in the Mishkan too. Not only the construction of the Mishkan. And then the service in the Mishkan, so they had Toichen for Lechem upon him, they baked the Lechem upon him, so Afiyah was the Malacha. So now, what we have is the following. So we have the situation that you took wheat and you ground it up and you made flour. So the truth is, we're really rendering it royal achil in that fashion. What are you going to do with a kernel of wheat? Mix it with water and make a loaf of bread? It's a gate nisht, right? You have to do something. It's not a very edible item the way it presents itself in nature. So what you do normally is you grind it up and you make flour out of it. After you make it, it turns into flour, you add liquid to it, it makes a chemical reaction, it makes dough, and then you bake it, and then it becomes royal achila. So the teichen really, which Tosfos talked about, was according to Rishalmi, the Haradach was what the teichen was exactly in the Mishkan. So Tosfos' Shita resonates very, very well, in fact, particularly well, the Shita of Rishalmi. That teichen was to render the wheat royal achila, royal for use. That was a step. Now it was prepared for use. You put it into, you added water to it, and you were able to work. But until now, it was not useful. It wasn't really.
Flour was considered royal achila.
But it's a step towards making it royal achila.
It doesn't have to be making a royal achila, as long as it's a step in the process.
Maybe, as I said, maybe according to Tosfos, we could extend it to even that. But at least it was. That was its purpose: was to render it usable. It wasn't usable until now in the form it was, and now we're rendering it usable. So that resonates Allah with Tosfos' Shita. Any questions, Rabbi Yisai, about Teichen?
The issue of scratching something off your clothing, some food, would the Rabbi say that applies to any type of food? Or
there's two different issues. There are two different issues. If you scrape it off so much that it doesn't leave a stain, so then you have a question of malabin, of cleansing on Shabbos. But if you're just taking it off from the surface and you're going to still leave something underneath, so if it's dried already, then you could have a problem of teichen too. Assuming it's something that wasn't, mushed up before Shabbos. If you spilled mashed potato on yourself, so you're not going to have teichen and taking it off. You'd have a teichen achat teichen in that case.
If you get a stain of wine, There's nothing much you can do.
You have to leave it alone, yeah. You know, people, yeah, people run, you know, they don't realize. They spill something on their clothes on Shabbos, they run to the sink to put water on it. That's malabin, that's Ramesh Ha'isa Duraisa. What, you'll see it all the time?
What if food dried it? What if food spilled over the skin? So, you go to the lobby, obviously, so you can go to the sink. But if you have no access to a sink, you would still have a problem with scratching off, right?
If it dried, you're not going to leave it.
Say you didn't notice whatever it was and it dried on his skin. You would have to go to, you would not have to go to the sink, right? You couldn't just scratch it off his...
I would guess it would be better than if... I think it would be better just to let the water, you know, wash it off however it comes. I would think so. Now, there's... I think we're going to go next to Losh, because there's an overlap between Teuchen and Losh. Now... Oh, it's, you know, it's not going to be yet, and it's not going to be... 3 weeks is probably also not going to be. When's the week of the, what week? Oh, 3 weeks is the week, and 4 weeks is the Rocking Course, right? The 21st, I think. I'm going to, that Tuesday night I won't be here, the week of the Rocking Course. I have to go upstate. But, so I think we should have three more shiurim, I think, until then. So the next two, no, there's two more shiurim until then, yeah. So two more shiurim. The two more shiurim are going to be, there's going to be a review in Hilchos Nida the next 2 weeks. Starting at 8 o'clock till 9:30 till Marv. Then I think there's going to be a week hiatus. I think the 21st is going to be the Tuesday I'm in Rocking Course. And then after that, like the 28th, maybe we'll start again. That is a session. Sorry, I just wonder, there is an overlap between Losh and Teuchen. And why is that? You know, when we think in the simplest terms, you don't have overlap. Because, you know, Losh, what's Losh? You take flour and water, you make a dough. That's, you know, that's Losh. That's true. What happens if I mash a banana on Shabbos? Is there a Loshish? The fact that I'm using it, I pulverize the thing, right? There's nothing of the pulp that's left unpulverized. And it's held together by its own natural liquid. Is this a problem of Losh or not? A Losh implies that I added an outside liquid to it. So the Chazon Ish is of the view that besides the issue of teichen that's involved in mashing a banana, there's also a losh issue, or an avocado. So that's why these two malachas, in fact, very greatly overlap each other. You would be able to. He held both. It's a sefta, I got some ice, and it's not really, you know, that'll be when we take it up again, Be'ezus Hashem. But there is an overlap between Teuchen and Losh, so I think next we're going to go to Losh. And Losh touches a lot of things. It's not only making dough, there's a lot of other things that we do which touch on Melechus Losh, a lot. Things that we do that we have to face regularly on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yisa, I think we'll hold it at this point.